Welcome to Enough Wicker, a podcast where we take our shot at getting into the Bible as we discuss the greatest television show of all time, The Golden Girls. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Sarah.
And today we're tackling the 167th episode in the series, The Pope's Ring.
Ah, yes. A hard Catholic episode. Let's just lean really holy in there.
Wine.
I know. Oh God, it's great. It's like, it's so funny because as a recovering Catholic, it's like this, all this context and the you know, discussion of the Pope and the fact that like he has authority and the eagerness of both Sophia and, you know, Dorothy to not only get close to him, but for Sophia to think that his specific blessing is closer to God or closer to miracles in some way. It just gives me a lot of eye rolling moments. So I'm kind of excited for us to sort of get into the history of the Pope and his ring and yada yada.
Yeah. Have you been to the Vatican?
I have indeed. It's very pretty. Yeah. There's a lot of money there.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, lots of money. I went to pretend I was in the Da Vinci Code, and I am interested in the
Rose Line.
Yeah. As a historical place, and like I'm interested in it from like a sociological perspective, but to your point, like, you know, a lot of people there are there for like this religious experience, and like, you know, that is pretty foreign to me. Like, I'm not having that, but I had memories of being in the Vatican and seeing these people who were like, you know, like overcome by emotion of like being in this place where like the Pope is, and like, who is the Pope? It's just like a, you know, just some Joe.
You never know when the wind might blow your way.
Yeah, the smoke. What a good joke. That's a highbrow
smoke,
reference.
Smoke. Sorry. Yeah. It was very highbrow reference. Yes, exactly. But yes, I'm so mad I misquoted that. Because I honestly have in my notes, I was like, wow, insider baseball.
Right?
Seriously. But yeah, I mean, and listen, like spirituality, all of that kind of stuff, I separate that holy, I keep saying holy with a W, but yeah. I've been making very good puns here, from religion and like organized religion sense. And what we're focusing on, or at least I'd like to focus on in this particular episode, is this like organized religion. We are appointing a mortal and then saying that he is more than mortal, or right hand of God, or like calls God on the phone or whatever, has his pager number. I don't know what the whole like actual relationship is supposed to be, but I think that there is it's just interesting as a study. But I mean, to everybody's credit who wrote this episode, that's absolutely how Sophia would be as a Catholic, right?
Yeah, totally. So actually, about this episode and Sophia's sort of devout Catholicism, in Colucci's book, they talk about how the original idea for this episode was Sophia and like a Polish friend of hers basically like feuding over who's the better Catholic. And like, because the Pope is Polish, like, you know, her friend had some, I guess, like a little bit of a lead. But like, basically, they were trying to compete to get tickets to the mass. And I mean, it wasn't so far off from like where we ended up, but I thought that was interesting, particularly because of the Pope, you know, he's Polish.
Exactly. I mean, I grew up in a very Catholic family, and instead of the expression, does a bear shit in the woods, to mean something obvious, it was, is the Pope Polish? So, you know, at this time we got JP2, and it's kind of funny. I love the idea though. Did they say why they like moved it to the Pope? Like, they just decided to go bigger and badder, or somebody was like, you know who is Polish? The Pope. Like, how did that arrive here?
Yeah, so I think the Pope was always like part of the story, but I think they thought it would be funnier to have Dorothy, like, I mean, and that is funny when Sophia like gets rid of her ticket. I think that that's a funny bit. And I think because of all of the like wackiness of the Miles story, it would have been a lot to have an additional guest star, like with the priest who's great, who delivers the news at the house, and the guy who plays the Pope, who interestingly, The actor who plays the Pope also played the Pope in Sister Act, which is like, you know, a very classic appearance. And his name is Gene Graytak. He also played the Pope in like one of the Naked Gun movies. So he's he's pretty typecast. He really looks like him.
I mean, he really does look like him. It's kind of amazing. Although I always laugh every time in the hospital scene when he walks down the hallway. He's just like moving his, he's like gesturing and you're like, oh my God, the overacting of unpaid, unspoken extras. I mean, he's paid clearly, but I also love, like, you know, at the end where he can't say dialogue because it would cost too much money. He's just sitting there having Sophia bounce jokes off him. It's great.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Anyway, well, while we're talking about the Pope, let's talk about this ring. Okay, what do you know about the Pope's ring? Because it's not only that this man in Sophia's eyes and Catholic's eyes and whatever is like the, you know, right hand of God, whatever, in on earth, God's rep on earth, and basically, you know, his blessing counts more, quote unquote, than sort of a regular old priest or whatever it is. But not only that, that there is like some ring that he has that they never say anything about like power, but like, you know, Dorothy goes on this thing about how it's like the symbol of the Pope's authority, which I think is just really fascinating. So anyway, what do you know about the ring?
Yeah. So, well, I have a little bit of history. So it was basically they can date it back to at least the 13th century of the Pope wearing a ring like this. And, in the 1400s, it was used to seal the papal briefings with wax. So that's, I think, how it became this like thing that people were aware of. And basically, like now it's like the ring when you become the Pope and the smoke does blow your way. I think the ring is like similar to like a coronation, or like, I guess, like a wedding. Like it's symbolic. You know, whatever it is. But as they say, like it is, you know, it's jewel encrusted. It's a super fancy jewelry ring. And there's no, I couldn't find an estimate for the actual value of the ring, but the Vatican in general is estimated net worth between $10 and $15 billion, which I feel like is probably an under a conservative estimate. So
that's what we have access to.
Exactly.
To
right.
Evaluate.
So,
like,
yeah. So, I mean, it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, God, it's crazy. I mean, it's interesting, at least like from my research, it's called the Ring of the Fisherman. That it's like there's something, you know, it's probably related to Peter and the apostles or something along those lines. But yeah, I just it's fascinating. And it seems like, you know, Sophia makes like, you think he wears his fakes in public like Zsa Zsa? Like, it seems like with the wealth of the Vatican that they would, right? They would actually have like a ring, particularly if it did have jewels on it, be a little more fake if he's shaking hands and has, you know, some old lady slip it off his finger. But anyway, I just, it's fascinating that you say it's like almost like a coronation, right? Where, or even like, yeah, a wedding where you're sealing the deal and it's like these old ceremonies, but it has to be something inherently that we've decided is valuable because it's shiny. You know,
yeah.
It's like going all the way back. It's really fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. The tradition of it. And I think like that's sort of the point is like it's, even if you're watching this and you don't like quite understand the symbolism behind it, like obviously you're like, oh wow, like you shouldn't be taking jewelry from the Pope. You can kind of like sympathize that. But I think when you have Catholic, like a Catholic background, or like you're familiar with the like significance of it, it adds to it because it's not just like a piece of jewelry that he's wearing. It's like,
right,
it's like symbolic of his power or his, yeah, I guess his relationship to God or whatever. I guess that's also probably one of the same. And so like,
right. Fair.
I also do want to say like both of these storylines in this episode are like absolutely ridiculous. And like, we've talked about it like a few times, like through this season and even the last season, but I think like there's a significant like turn happening, like even further from where we have been of like, it just doesn't matter. Reality does not matter in these storylines. There is no consideration for like any constraint on reality.
Yeah, and what's even more fascinating about that to me is that if you boil down the storylines, it gets to Sophia's worried about her sick friend, and Miles is worried about getting older, or you
Right.
know, like, and Rose needs to talk to him about it. Like, they're really basic stories that we've actually heard already in various forms, more grounded in reality. But like, yeah, the pathways that both of these, you know, AB stories take to get to like the core is wacky as hell, and like just like very, you know, I mean, and it's fun, right? It's a fun romp. It's a very season seven, like, wow, where are we going with
Totally,
this?
totally. So, to like talk a little bit about the Pope, more into the Pope story. Like, Sophia's motivation is actually pretty altruistic. Like, I do believe that she wants a blessing for Agnes because she thinks it will make a difference. I think it's funny. I do think it's funny that she like sold Dorothy's ticket. Obviously, the thing with the like foam finger and like, that visual really killed,
Such
I
a
think.
great prop. Oh my God,
Yeah.
it really does. Oh, he'll notice me.
Yeah. But I will say, like, it is, I understand it, but also, like, it's a pretty dick move because, like, when Dorothy says, like, a papal mass is a thing people wait a lifetime for, like, it is.
Yes,
And he's probably
it is.
coming to Miami very much, you know, like, he's got to go to Vegas to deal with Dolores Van Cartier. He's very busy. Yeah, I think it's like, it's funny. And, you know, Dorothy, like, gets over it relatively quickly. She's got to deal with the thief.
I mean, she's totally, well, it's funny because I think actually the way that she reacts to that, where she's like, whatever, it's just my mother. Like, at this point, like, she is so used to Sophia's antics that she actually can't get too mad about these types of things. Because, like, even later, when she's like, you know, if I'm not home, you know, like, it means that, you know, Agnes is dead. And if Agnes is dead, you killed her. And if you killed her, that makes you a murderer. And she's just like, enjoy, Ma, like
Yeah.
reading a reading
So
magazine.
funny.
Because I love that scene so much. I love it for Dorothy and Sophia's relationship. And I love it for Dorothy especially, where she's like, you know, evolving to, she's getting older herself, right? We've been sort of on this journey with her, and she just actually has to let some of the Sophia nonsense roll off her back because, like, she can take everything to heart. Not that she always did, but I think that this, you know, she draws the line at robbing a very famous, you know, representative of a religion on planet Earth, but like, other things have to fall by the wayside because Sophia, it just is that ridiculous, right? And she's always going to sort of poke at her. So I really love that she just like is like, fine, you traded the tickets, whatever.
Yeah. There's a few really good exchanges to sort of follow that with Dorothy and Sophia when Sophia's like telling the whole story and she's like, he leaves the ring behind as a memento. It's like so dramatic. And then Dorothy, like, you know, there's like a little bit of a pause, but she's like, you stole the Pope's ring. And like
Exactly. Oh,
such a
so great.
funny interaction. Like, it's just such a good delivery. Both are like such good deliveries. The dramatic tale of the Pope like leaving the ring for Sophia. And Dorothy like not only not buying it, but like
Yeah,
just
immediately.
being shocked by the actual situation. I think that's really good too.
Oh, it's really great. Even before that, with like, you know, okay, Ma, squirt me in the eye and get it over with. There's a lot here where Dorothy is just, it's very established. Even if this is the very first episode that you watch, you know, of like the relationship between Dorothy and Sophia is really, it's very clear. Like, it's always like Sophia being causing mischief and Dorothy having to chase after her, clean up her mess.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, Ma, the Bible is a done deal. I mean, it's so perfect. She has a lot of great lines in this, even though she is definitely not the focus. You know, she, like I said, she's just cleaning up.
Yeah. Yeah. She's kind of an assistant to the Sophia story. And she's like, you
And
know,
the assistant to the Rose one.
she's sort of a prop. And like, so I do want to talk about that. So the whole thing, like from the beginning, when they're competing over like what to get Rose, and Dorothy gets the Roy sweatshirt, which is so funny because like that is something that like is super thoughtful, and like I'm sure she retained like Rose saying it a few times, but Rose doesn't even put together what it is, which I think actually is just, you know, like indicative of what a good like thoughtful gift it is.
Yes.
And when Rose does figure it out, she's like, you know, super excited. But Blanche being like hyper competitive to give the best gift, I was like, I don't know if I find that to be really, she is competitive and she wants to be like liked for sure. But it just seems like kind of a weird thing for her to sort of be like poking Dorothy at it, like who's the better gift giver to Rose, especially when we know that Rose is like a horrible gift giver.
Yes.
But I buy it. I feel like she's just like sort of looking for a competition.
Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, and I like it, it plays fine to me, right? But yeah, scratching the surface, you're kind of like, would she really care that much? You know,
yeah.
Like it seems like something that, yeah, it doesn't seem like it's fully based in like the reality of the series. However, your point about Blanche wanting to compete about something, it automatically makes it about her again. So I think that actually does ring true, right? If you had to have her wanting to compete for Rose's affections, which we've seen in like little tiny bits here and there, you know, that this is like a good venue for it.
Yeah.
But I think it is interesting because it doesn't like, I don't know. We have this whole like, we sort of see this before with the, you know, my master, I do believe you're jealous. You know, like trying to like all of the teasing of Miles and like playing hard to get and like, you know, withholding sex to make the crops come, whatever. And, you know, at the end, Blanche has sort of the comeuppance of like, you know, my advice works for the shallow guys that I go out with, kind of thing. And it there's not that here, you know. It's right. Like she sort of ruins things and there's like not enough time for Blanche to clean up from it, so there isn't the sort of like coming back to the heartstring piece. There's just, you know, we basically end on, you know, Blanche being like, she still hasn't worn your sweatshirt.
Yeah.
and it's like, yeah, it's funny and it's great, and like honestly, like her gift gave Rose the pathway to sort of talk to Miles and confront him, you know, essentially about him hiding the surgery from her, but like it certainly wasn't the right way to go. It's like there really isn't, like, you know, Rose herself is just like, I want you guys to see this because I want to prove to you that Miles isn't cheating on me and blah blah blah. But yeah, it sort of blows up in her face, and I'm not sure how I feel about how it like comes back around to like quote unquote teach a lesson.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, I think like from the beginning also, like Blanche gives it to her because she like kind of had a favor from the detective, I presume, like who she's like
totally
with. Nature's credit card. But I think like, you know, when Miles gets mad at Rose, like that's totally reasonable.
Yeah.
And like, first of all, like the detective is so creepy. It's like very like Slugworth in Willy Wonka, or like the paparazzi in Spice World. It's giving me both.
Yes.
Of those. But like, it is weird. It and like Dorothy, like, you know, they say this basically, like giving the gift of suspicion, and like Miles is trying to act trendy, trying to be young, which like I am too. I don't know, shame. I just think so, like, great. It's not, I don't know. Yeah, it's totally inappropriate. And like, yeah, two episodes ago, Blanche basically like helped, or however many it was, like was like, oh, come out with me and my friends. Like it is a little like saboteur and like not, I don't know, it's just like not nice. It's not nice to stoke flames of suspicion where there are none, obviously. And like,
totally.
You know, I know that she's Rose's friend, but like she does have a relationship with Miles that's like cordial enough, so like that's also like not nice to him. It's I don't like it.
Well, and it's like she, you know, she has that whole like my mind's made up thing, right, where she's like, oh, I know men, I've seen this before. I know exactly what's going on here, without actually like to your point about her relationship with Miles, she should confront him.
It
should be a gift giving like that. But yeah, but of course we wouldn't have like the fun Polaroid camera in the bushes and, you know, we're out here. We're probably going to sit in these chairs.
Yeah.
I mean, it is very funny. But it I love is. How you said, like, the way, you know, Miles reacts totally appropriately. I love his line. He's like, this is an insult to me and our whole relationship. I think that's the most important part of what he says, which is like, Yeah, fucking talk to me, dude. Like, are you kidding? This is so insane. And it's just funny to me because we have ended up here before. We have ended up here before when Rose is not being a direct communicator and she's getting caught up yet again with the games that Blanche plays with her shallow guys, you know? So it's
Yeah.
just kind of funny. It's like what I said at the beginning of this episode where it's like we've sort of seen both of these scenarios before and then we just arrive at them kind of differently.
Yeah. And I mean, the other like very egregious thing that we need to talk about is that Blanche is like, oh, he was in the witness protection program. So
Oh
like
my God.
we're acknowledging that, but we're not, but he's still Miles, which makes no sense. So was the Nick like a double fake out? Like what? So we're saying he what? It's just like so, it's honestly, it's just so brazen of the writers to reference a story that they've basically phased out and didn't actually tie up, but to be like, yeah, no, that did happen. Like you remember that happening, but also he's still living as Miles. And he's still a college professor. Like the whole motivation for wanting to look young, which I also
Yes.
support Miles in, is like he's around youthful people and like he's on a college campus. And like it's totally understandable. And I think it's
Absolutely.
really, really great that they had a man do that, obviously.
Correct.
To like, you know, show that I think honestly, like for men, it's important for men and boys, really. Like, it's important to have representations of like normal insecurity that you don't respond to with like rage because that's the only
Totally.
emotion like men or boys are allowed to have.
Correct.
And you know, like, I think it's a really, really actually, if you sort of, you know, scholarly parse it out, I think it's actually a really great piece to have of Miles like admitting this and like talking about his insecurities of getting older and all of these
Yeah.
things. But the witness protection thing is just so like they just like don't care. And I love that.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's like, I too was also really taken aback by the fact that they even called that out. I was like, oh wow, thank you for acknowledging. But yeah, I just like to imagine that like between then and now, that he said, you know, Rose, like, you know, I've taken it up and I've been living as Miles so long and been a professor for so long, and I met you during this, and I'm just gonna like pick up this fake life as my real life.
Yeah, I love Miles.
Like he just decides to continue on with like the middle life that he had, as
Yeah.
opposed to when he was born as an accountant in Chicago or whatever the fuck. So I think that's totally fine and realistic, but it is hilarious where you're like, wow, you're acknowledging this, but what?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. He probably doesn't want to go back to Chicago. That's where all the mob stuff was happening. So
Totally. And like being a college professor, he clearly, you know, he probably got into accounting because he knew there was supposed to be money in it, good career, but like professors where his passion is, you know?
yeah,
We're going
totally.
to see that pretty soon with Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah.
Pardon me while I play the grand piano. Anyway, back to the beginning, right? Where like Dorothy is wrapping her gift and everything. I also love where she's like the whole like B story, or yeah, what is it? I guess, yeah, I guess it is the B story. Where she's like, did you get her a Ziggy card? Like, no, not Snoopy. And she's like, I didn't get her a card, and rips it up. I
Yeah.
also laughed at that because one, it's a good gag about being embarrassed that you chose something that somebody's making fun of, but two, like, it's Rose. Like,
That, I had that
that's
exact.
what
Rose
she
would
wants.
love Snoopy. Yeah. I know. I had
Exactly.
that
It makes no sense to me. So, but I do love their little fight where she's like, there's a man leaving in 10 minutes, be under him.
Yeah, it's a good
She
banter.
is a really great one. Oh, Jesus Christ. But yeah, there really is actually like some good Blanche and Dorothy moments in this, right? Because of the like antagonistic relationship of the giving gifts and everything. I even, you know, I even at the end where she's like, you come to me if you want advice on men, you go to Dorothy if there's grammar you want help with. She's like, you ended that sentence with a preposition just to bait me. And he goes, what would I do that for? Which is so great. And it actually, like, the audience is pretty slow to laugh, like pick
Yeah,
up
I know.
on
Did they
the
not
joke.
get it?
Oh, it's pretty great. But like the delivery in between them is incredible. Oh
Yeah,
my
and the
God.
smirk that Rue gives when she's like, what would I do that for? I think that that's so funny. And like, it is, I think, you know, we, I think sometimes there's a question of like, obviously Dorothy is like the smartest or like the most intellectual, but then it's like sort of like, is it Blanche or is it Sophia? But like Blanche, you know, if we're taking formal education as its own thing, like Blanche probably went to the best schools and she probably had like the best, you know, formal education. And so like, she is the one who can kind of like meet Dorothy on like grammar stuff or, you know, like things like that. So I think that I love that exchange so much. And that is also like, then there's a really great interaction between Blanche and Sophia when Sophia's just trying to like get move on when
it's like, I was 19. Ramis.
Yeah.
I was 19. Yeah. Fine. Ma, but she just said she was 19.
So funny.
Look at her now. You don't call that a tragedy? Oh, yeah. God. But even like Sophia, again, like that, I realized at this point with that, as well as the line that comes like shortly after where she's like, I don't think I have that thing that, you know, that doesn't draw attention to my bosom when the Pope's coming. And Sophia just goes, try not wearing makeup. It's like, it's so rude. But I, you know, and like, you know, talking about Miles, like, oh yes, he's having cosmetic surgery. About time. Like, I actually really like, I like mean Sophia if I can put her in the context of there's a lot weighing on her mind, or like in the, you know, she's trying to tell the story or like whatever, she's worried about her friend. Like there's other things happening that sort of not excuse, but kind of excuse her just being so short, right? It kind of almost goes back to like the original quote unquote origin story of her being no filter is because of the stroke. Like, it almost like gives a reason to it, as opposed to when I think she's just being a dick because she's bored, you know? So I really appreciate that more, because I think it's also like, that feels more realistic to me, you know, kind of like the other episode that we just talked about when Dorothy's like, oh, I haven't had my coffee, you know, slutting more off. Like, you know, you sort of have like some, not like biochemical excuse too, but yeah, kind of. And it's just, I don't know, the meanness of her in this episode rings more true to me and is funnier as a result, I think.
Yeah, well, I think that it's kind of like a chicken or the egg thing, because I think it actually like also, it's, I think even in life, like if you're going to go for a joke that's like maybe a little bit mean, but it's funny, and like you're confident that the other person you're japping will think it's funny, like I think that works. I think where it doesn't work is when it's like, yeah, it's just mean. And like, it's also preying on someone's like worst insecurity, which I think is the thing that
totally
does with Dorothy. And this is all just like, you know, like Blanche is telling a ridiculous like Song of the South story. Like it's all cutting, but it's like, not trying to make you feel bad about something real. It's just like funny, like quick responses that are like sarcastic and a bit biting. So I think that that's like, that's also part of it. I think she's like very funny in all of these, and like the she's also like, I don't know, it's interesting because like the power shifts a little bit too when she's like, when she lost the ring and she's like, say in the next day or two.
Yeah.
Dorothy comes in, you know, like.
She sniffs it out. So great.
Yeah.
Do you want me to turn you upside down and shake you? Oh, gosh. But yeah, there's like that kind of weird vulnerability based on, you know, what I think is a mistaken misbelief that this guy has some sort of special power to heal your friend. And it's funny, we actually don't get any, update on Agnes's condition, despite the fact that the Pope walked through the hospital on his way to the airport, just gesturing over and over again with his hands.
Wonder if he healed her.
I know. Yeah, exactly. But it is kind of funny, right? And it's like, going back to what you were saying about the Vatican before, it's like, there is, I do believe that there is placebo effects, and there is like, you know, if you are a spiritual person, as I assume Agnes also is, right? And we don't know if she's unconscious or in a coma or whatever it is, but like for Sophia, the mere fact that the Pope was even close and near her was like great, you know, like we didn't even get confirmation that he went to her room.
Right.
Like, oh, sorry, I'm here for crow's feet. Well, you're right, he doesn't do that.
That's such a great line.
And like, such a good delivery too.
Yeah, like, it's
like not mean, But yeah, it's not mean, but it's definitely disdainful. Like, okay, goodbye. But
Yeah,
yeah,
that
but
guy
you know what I mean? Like,
agreed.
she's so buoyed. Her spirits are so buoyed by the fact that he's there. And you have to wonder that, like, that sort of, I mean, there's so much research as to like the emotional uplifting of a person literally affects their physical uplifting, right? Like, people have to have a literal reason to live for. And like, I think that there is some value in that, that again, if you were a spiritual religious person like Agnes and the fucking Pope, the leader of your religion on earth or whatever, was like in your hospital, like I'm pretty sure that you would your condition would improve,
Yeah,
I
no,
don't
totally. And
necessarily know it think it's divine intervention, but I do think it's something going on with our humanity.
yeah, well, it's like manifestation, which is like, totally like
Totally.
used in things that are like often like the total opposite of organized religions like this, like structured religions like this. And I definitely think there's something to that. I feel like it's actually like very much the same principle, which is like you feel kind of vindicated when like something you've asked like the universe for or the moon for or like God for happens.
Totally.
And so I think it totally does uplift her. It uplifts Sophia for sure. And I assume, yeah, like hopefully it helped Agnes too. But I just want to like go back to the scene where the priest comes into the room and Miles is like, oh no, I wouldn't feel right. Like, it's just like so ridiculous, like as though,
Yeah.
like, don't give me the Pope's blessing. Like, you must divert it from me.
Yes, exactly. He's like, oh, what are you doing in here? Yeah. So great. Also, I've never asked the moon for anything. Should I be doing that?
Yeah, it's a thing. Full moon, new moons, you got it,
Yeah.
but also never manifest during an eclipse. That's a PSA.
Oh, really? What's
Yeah.
the reasoning behind that?
I don't know actually like why, but you're like every like both like like spiritual people and like also like witches and all of that's like different camps of like healers and stuff, they all just say it. So I just listen to
I
them.
just listen. I just blindly listen.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's Lauren's religion.
Yeah.
The internet people talking about eclipses. All right,
Yeah. The
perfect.
witch we used to work with actually, I follow her for a lot of guidance. I'm not even kidding.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. Totally forgot we worked with her.
Moving on.
Moving on. I do want to talk about a fart joke in the beginning that does not
Bark
get
in the
the
kennel.
necessary amount of laughs. Right, exactly. They set up the perfect, joke about, the kennel, and then she just says, whoops, and Dorothy's like, whoops, is that Pope related or just another bark in the kennel? I mean, it's so amazing. Like,
Is
it's
good.
really, really good. I'm really like kind of disappointed in the audience, similar to the not catching on to the preposition joke. But I mean, I can excuse that. Not everybody's a grammar nerd who likes diagramming sentences like me and Dorothy.
Yeah.
Another great line is with the bikini underwear. Dorothy goes,
Just
Blanche,
the
please. Oh yeah, just the bottoms is great, but Dorothy's like, Blanche, please, the Pope is in town.
bottoms.
Again, like, let's talk. Can we talk a little bit more about Dorothy being like sort of the prop here? I mean, I want to say like there is like. Once we get, I think in two episodes we have Goodbye, Mr. Gordon. It's fucking finally a Dorothy episode. But like she has been relegated to being sort of the sideline here. And she obviously does it masterfully. But I think what's fascinating is like she does have commentary like that line that's almost like meant to one, it's funny, but she's literally like sitting on the couch commentating, and that like links the two stories together, right? Like she is a character on the page, on the script, that is very unifying, for these storylines, but isn't really serving her on her own. It's almost like Manic Pixie Dream Dorothy kind of thing. Like she's just sort of like
Oh, that's a
helping
good
further the other
illustration.
characters. Yeah. Oh my God. We're probably gonna have to make that into a meme.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And I mean, maybe that's because Bea Arthur sort of like checked out in some way
Yeah.
or something like that, or she's doing other stuff. She's, you know, like she's definitely present. But yeah, there's a noticeable change when we get to Mr. Gordon that she's like the center point of the episode.
Yes.
And I think, like, God. I think you said this maybe a few episodes back too, of like, I'm sure they're testing out some Golden Palace like ideas at this point. So maybe that's also part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fair. That's fair. But yeah, it's kind of funny because I obviously am looking for more Dorothy, and she's brilliant in this episode, but it's really not, there's nothing she's learning. It's just cleaning up her mess and rolling her eyes at her rude roommate.
Yeah, but it might be also like, it might be fun for Bea Arthur to be doing this, like acting in a different way, like truly being the manic pixie dream Dorothy, of like just being funny, like really truly, like she doesn't have to do any dramatic acting, and she's kind of like in and out here and there, you know? So maybe it's like working for her too. But yeah, I definitely do see that. And I think like this episode is good because she's inserted enough to like be like clean things up, as you said, but a couple episodes back, like when she's barely even in it, I think there is a lot missing.
Yes. Yeah, it's true. It's true. She's a unifier. Makes sense. What else you got?
I just have like a couple other things. So one, Rose, like, wasn't Rose like a candy striper for a long time? This hospital was like the same hospital where she gave her dog away.
Totally. You know, not to be confused with a candy stripper.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, we touched on like Rose going about it in the totally wrong way, and it is like, you know, I don't know. It's a tough thing to imagine, like, being in Rose's situation. Opening the results. And also, like, they kind of do, like, breeze past it. Like, Rose is like, oh, well, that didn't last long, did it? And Miles doesn't really get to be mad at her. But, like,
yeah,
it would be reasonable if he were to be mad again. Like, it's like, I get it.
She got
the results. And also, like, I would open them. I know myself enough to, like, know that.
Yes, totally.
If they're there, like, I'm going to use a butter knife, maybe with a butter knife.
Open the damn envelope. Yeah.
But like, I would, you know, like I would look to, so no, I don't mean to like criticize that, but it's definitely, it's, you know, sows the seeds of mistrust. And like, I actually think that would be a very, very big thing in a relationship to deal with, rather than just like glossed over, like, haha, that's funny. Like, it's like a total violation of privacy, in addition to it being insulting to the relationship, which I also think when Miles like storms off, that's another sort of like gender role reversal, because like
it is, you're right,
a man storming off like upset about his relationship, you know?
Absolutely. No, honestly, that's a really good point. I didn't even think about that. But I want to flip it too, to say like, I also think that Miles can forgive her a little bit more easily at the end, because he, and again, this isn't come out in the script, but like, I can see him recognizing that, oh, I actually made her very worried because I wasn't comfortable sharing this sort of vain, you know, procedure that I'm going to have because I was embarrassed or whatever it is. And I should actually be telling, you know, my partner about things, big or small, because if she did find out I was in the hospital, obviously she would think the worst. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's sort of like the counterbalance, like it's gone about all wrong, but he also probably should have told her.
Yeah.
And considering the relationship that they're in, right? They're not casually dating. Like, this is, you know, this is a deal.
Yeah, so, right. That's true.
Yeah, so I think, and it's like, I'm not excusing what Rose did, you know, but I do think it's funny. I think, again, when I'm filling in the gaps of why he's choosing to live as Miles, it's the same filling in the gaps of how that actual conversation went.
Yeah, totally.
It's one of those beautiful situations where I shouldn't have done that. Well, I should have told you in the first place, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. So. No, the only other thing I have, which we talked about a couple episodes, is these like post-credit scenes. The hell is this one? Oh my God.
So 90s. So, and again, they're weird. Bizarre, right? It's supposed to be like a joke. It's like, it's so bizarre. I mean, it is pretty funny where it's like, you know, I don't have to cut you. I trust you. But it's just like, it's not, I feel like it is a 90s trend where it's just like, oh, this actually isn't happening in reality. It's almost like a fake version, or like a unspoken dream sequence of like the actual like storyline. Like it's not supposed to be part of the canon, I guess, in my mind.
Yeah.
It's just supposed to be goofy. Like it's almost like a blooper.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like just like a funny scene they wanted to show, but couldn't work into the episode.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, or it doesn't work at all with like the reality of the situation, right? Like they literally had a whole part in this episode about how the Pope can't show up at their house, even though George Bush did.
Yeah.
Too funny. But yeah, it really, you're right. That like really adds to the bonkersness of season 7. It's too much.
Totally. I think that's pretty much all I have. It's funny though. I think this is like a lot of a lot of my notes are just like funny lines. It's like it's totally ridiculous, but it's like ridiculous, like harmless for the most part. And so I really do. I love this one.
Yeah, it's great. I also just love all the cute guys are married or popes.
Popes hate to be kept waiting.
Yeah, it's incredible. Oh boy. Well, yeah, that's all I got for this one. So join us next time when we're going to discuss the cost of bus fare from St. Olaf to Miami and how many years on average it would take one to save it. Take care, everybody.